Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Litigation Practice Group, was recorded on Tuesday, March 8, 2016, during a live telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members. Welcome to the Practice Group's telephone conference call, as today we'll be discussing gambling rules and federalism. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. Please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Also, this call is being recorded for use as a podcast in the future. We're very pleased to welcome a first-time guest today, Jonathan Wood. He's a staff attorney at the Pacific Legal Foundation. He's going to do some opening remarks of about 10 to 15 minutes, but as always, we'll be looking to you for questions, so please have those in mind as we go forward with the program. With that, Jonathan Wood, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Dean. Before I begin, I should probably add my own disclaimer. I filed an amicus brief on behalf of Pacific Legal Foundation and the Cato Institute, supporting cert the first time that New Jersey's effort to legalize sports gambling was challenged. But of course, for this call, I'm only representing myself. For those that aren't familiar with the issues of New Jersey's efforts to legalize sports gambling within the state, it starts with a federal statute, the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, which Congress enacted in 1992, with the aim of stopping the spread of state-sanctioned sports gambling and to maintain the integrity of our professional, amateur, and particularly college sports leagues. The statute in particular forbids states from sponsoring, operating, advertising, promoting, licensing, or authorizing by law sports gambling. At the time, every state but Nevada had some pretty broad prohibitions on sports gambling, so what Congress was trying to do was freeze those existing state prohibitions in place. Of course, Nevada is exempt from the statute, and thus it has regulated legal sports gambling, but no other state has that industry because of the statute. The citizens of New Jersey, concerned about the state economy, particularly the economy of Atlantic City, passed a constitutional amendment by referendum asking the legislature to legalize sports gambling, and it did so. In 2012, it created a regime to license and regulate sports gambling within the state, setting up what was an acknowledged conflict with this federal law. Several of the sports leagues sued and were supported by the federal government as intervener, arguing that New Jersey's effort to legalize sports gambling was preempted by PASPA, the federal statute that I was just discussing. New Jersey's response, interestingly, was that the legalization couldn't be preempted because if PASPA was interpreted to require the state to maintain its prohibitions, the state government would be unconstitutionally commandeered, and this would violate the 10th Amendment. In addition, the state argued that the special exemption for Nevada violated the then recently resuscitated equal sovereignty doctrine, which the Supreme Court recognized in the Shelby County case. So some background on those two doctrines, which are the first one in particular is rather important to the most recent case. The Supreme Court has explained the 10th Amendment forbids the federal government from commandeering state government by forcing it to adopt or implement federal policy. So, for instance, the federal government can't order states to enact laws to take on nuclear waste or any other type of waste and can't force state officials to implement federal law. New Jersey argued that, in effect, this is what the leagues were arguing PASPA does, that it required the state to maintain their existing prohibitions and therefore commandeered the legislature's ability to change state law. The equal sovereignty doctrine, if anyone's interested, was that an argument the federal government can't unevenly regulate the states without some connection to the underlying purpose. If sports gambling is bad, New Jersey argued, it's bad everywhere. And so it was unconstitutional to give Nevada preferential treatment. Unfortunately, the Third Circuit rejected these arguments, but they did so by adopting a narrowing interpretation of PASPA. The Third Circuit and the panel construed it to only forbid states from affirmatively authorizing or licensing sports gambling. As you'll recall, as I said, the statute forbade states from sponsoring, operating, advertising, promoting, licensing, or authorizing by law. And the panel said those are affirmative acts. States remain free to repeal their prohibitions in whole or in part because by doing so, they're just making state law silent on the question. They're not actually affirmatively granting a license or granting permission to engage in sports gambling. And New Jersey's first effort of legalization involved the granting of licenses and a great deal of regulation, so according to the Third Circuit, that violated PASPA and didn't raise commandeering questions. The state sought cert, but unfortunately the Supreme Court declined cert, and as I mentioned, I filed a brief, an amicus brief in support of cert on those issues. In the wake of the Third Circuit's panel decision, New Jersey once again tried to legalize sports gambling, this time relying on the affirmative authorization versus repeal distinction the panel drew. This time, New Jersey passed a law that repealed the state ban on sports gambling to the extent that it applies to bets placed by those over 21 in casinos or racetracks. In effect, New Jersey has repealed its prohibition so that anyone over the age of 21 is free to place a bet in a casino, current, or former racetrack, of which there are a few in the state. But everywhere else, outside those areas, or if a person is 21, the existing prohibition continues. Once again, the league sued and have been supported by the feds as amici. Despite the state's assertion that it was availing itself of the power acknowledged by the Third Circuit panel, the district court and a second panel on the Third Circuit have held that this legalization effort, too, is preempted by PASPA. In effect, what the district court and the panel held is that New Jersey's only option under PASPA is to completely repeal its prohibition on sports gambling. The logic being that narrower repeals that attempt to allow to remove the prohibitions for only certain bets in certain places begin to look a lot like the government affirmatively authorizing gambling in those places. The Third Circuit agreed to hear the case en banc, and on February 17th, a few weeks ago, the Third Circuit held oral argument. As you can imagine, the main issue was what is the line between preemption and anti-commandeering? There is a long history of federal law preempting state laws that are inconsistent with federal law, and the PASPA's prohibition on states sponsoring or authorizing or licensing gambling certainly looks like a preemption clause, and the question of how far can you go before you're commandeering the state government. Of course, since it was an en banc hearing, the initial panel's decision, the affirmative authorization versus repeal dichotomy, was again on the table, as several of the judges framed it. So really, it was a wide-open opportunity for the court to consider both of those issues and what New Jersey was doing in this particular case. So for anyone that's familiar with preemption, the prototypical case is where federal law will set some standard and forbid any states from either regulating the field if the federal regulation is sufficiently comprehensive, or at least forbid states from regulating in any way that conflicts with the federal standard. The prototypical commandeering issue is where the feds affirmatively order the states to do something. Well, PASPA obviously falls somewhere in the middle. The feds decided not to set the standard. PASPA doesn't contain a general prohibition on sports gambling. It's instead directed to states and freezes the existing state law prohibitions and only forbids individuals from placing bets pursuant to a state-authorized gambling regime. So, in effect, the PASPA does seem to have some control or does seem to force states to, at least in some respects, maintain their existing prohibition, which begins to look a lot more like commandeering, not preemption. The main issue in the oral argument for the en banc court was, does the first panel's decision make sense? Is it elevating form over substance? Should the New Jersey be able to accomplish essentially the same end it tried the first time, the second time, simply because it chose to frame it as repealing a prohibition rather than giving affirmative authorization? Several of the judges were clearly bothered by the fact that that seems to be inconsistent with what Congress was trying to do. Congress's point was to stop the spread of sports gambling, and that's not impacted by whether the states are affirmatively authorizing it or whether they're merely repealing the prohibition. And it would seem to be too clever by half to say that the state can get around that depending on how it drafts its statute. The other main issue and what the federal government argument focused on was, at what point is a repeal so narrow that in effect it is an authorization? Here, as I said, the The repeal is focused only on casinos and current or former racetracks for bets placed by those over the age of 21. That has so many specific requirements that it begins to look like a regulation of sports gambling rather than a repeal of a prohibition. The problem for that, of course, and something several of the judges raised, is that it ultimately just depends on how you look at it. So applying the text of PASPA, New Jersey should have been free to repeal the prohibition entirely and then the next day enact, in effect, what the current prohibition is. And so clearing the existing prohibition out, they could have then enacted a prohibition forbidding gambling outside of casinos and racetracks by those under 21. And you couldn't argue that that legislation specifically imposing a new prohibition was authorizing sports gambling by law or licensing it because it's framed as a prohibition. The question is, by framing it as a repeal of a prohibition, does it begin to look like an authorization? Another interesting issue that the federal government had some trouble explaining was that in the briefs they argued that it'd be fine for the executive, the governor or the regulatory bodies, to focus how they enforce the state prohibition. So they were arguing that PASPA doesn't require them to enforce federal policy to the fullest extent. But it doesn't make a lot of sense to say that the executive is free to say, for instance, we're going to focus our enforcement outside of the casinos and racetracks and essentially ignore that and what's happening there. But the legislature can't enact the same policy. That struck several of the judges as somewhat strange, but as I mentioned at the top, you know, the big issue to rebut all of the arguments the state has is that, in effect, it's just a clever drafting to try to avoid what Congress was clearly trying to do, which was stop the spread of state-sponsored sports gambling. And that's clearly what New Jersey is trying to do. They're trying to get gambling in their casinos and the racetracks to prop up their economy. And you have a clear conflict about what Congress wants and what New Jersey wants. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to construe PASPA so that it can be so easily circumvented. And with that, I think I've given you enough of the background to hopefully set up some questions, and I'll turn it back over to Dean.
Well, thank you very much, Jonathan Wood. In a moment, we'll all hear an announcement that will say the floor mode is on. After you hear that announcement, you can push the star button and the pound button on your telephone to indicate you have a question. So once again, if you have a question, push the star button, then the pound button on your telephone. Before we go to our first caller, let me ask just a quick question. Is this essentially amount to an enlargement of the existing casino and racetrack licenses? And if so, what's the consequence of that?
Of course, that's a big issue. That was a major issue in the oral argument. So as I mentioned, the PASPA focused on forbidding states from licensing sports gambling, and that was the problem in the first case. The state was clearly setting up a licensing regime. The government argues here that, in effect, they're doing the same thing. By limiting the repeal to casinos and racetracks, places that are subject to state licenses, they're essentially enlarging the existing licenses to include a license to sports gambling. The state's response is that the repeal is broader than that. It includes former racetracks where there are no existing permitting regimes or licensing regimes, and that is not limited to the people who actually have those licenses. Instead, it refers to place, not operator. So a casino could have a sports gambling book that was run by someone other than the casino license holder. It seemed like the court wasn't too thrilled with New Jersey's argument because there are so few cases. It's so unbelievable to think that casinos are going to open themselves up to unregulated sports gambling by someone else. And there are just so few former racetracks that really the main focus of the repeal is to get this in an area that is already heavily regulated and licensed by the state. And the state's best argument against that is that New Jersey licenses everything. Any sort of repeal is probably going to implement or going to ultimately touch on some other licensing regime. So if they liberalize car manufacturing or anything related to cars, the fact that most drivers have driver's license shouldn't change whether that's repealing a prohibition or an affirmative authorization.
All right. Once again, if you have a question in our audience, push the star button, then the pound button on your telephone. We have a single question now, then our lines will be wide open. For now, let's take our first call of the day.
Yes, this is John Brennan. I'm a reporter with the Bergen Record in New Jersey, which is the troublesome state and all this this national issue. I had a question about I was at the hearing last month, and Paul Clement, the attorney for the leagues, was challenged about what's the neutral principle on limitations. And first they asked if the New Jersey could prevent people from under 21 from gambling, and he was comfortable with that. And then they said, well, what if the elderly, senior citizens, were not allowed to gamble? And he said that might be a problem. And then they mentioned, well, what maybe they could say, what if nobody with credit card debt is allowed to do this kind of gambling? And his answer was sort of nebulous and some sort of a 50% total. But it seemed kind of not from any statute or law or anything else. So was that a problem for the leagues? And how do you explain what this neutral principle would be on what kind of limits you can have and what kind of limits you can't have?
I think it'll be difficult for the court to find one. So for the other listeners, what the leagues were trying to do was avoid interpreting PASPA to only allow the states to completely repeal their prohibition. The states pointed out New Jersey pointed out that would be inconsistent with PASPA because that would require the state, in effect, to allow children to gamble and the mentally ill and basically allow chaos in order to avoid a far smaller problem under PASPA of having gambling in casinos where it conceivably might end up being effectively regulated. The leagues wanted to avoid adopting that interpretation for obvious reasons, and so the line they proposed is that where the repeal is so narrow and so focused that, in effect, the narrowness itself establishes some sort of regulation, that's a problem, but that other types of partial repeals would be fine. So the example given was that the states would be free to change their prohibition so that they only applied to people under 21 or only applied to certain classes of people that raised particular problems or, for instance, perhaps only prohibited bets that were made under duress. But what Paul Clement was doing his best to avoid was accepting any sort of geographical limitation on the prohibition. So the court asked, would it be okay if instead of specifically saying the casinos and the racetracks, if the prohibition were repealed with respect to Atlantic County or Atlantic City itself? And there Clement said no, because clearly then what the state legislature would be trying to do is authorize sports gambling in its casinos. And instead of looking at the text of the statute and being overly focused on the form, look at what the state legislature is trying to do. If it's trying to prohibit something, which it would be doing if it prohibited gambling under the age of 21, that's fine. But if it's trying to create a narrow exception for a special class of entities or people, that looks like a license.
Once again, if you have a question, push the star button, then the pound button on your telephone. We don't have any questions pending. I'm going to unmute our first questioner's microphone and see if there's a follow-up question from the reporter.
Yes, the other issue I had was, this is John Brennan again, is that judges have been saying in this case for years that the referencing the licensing issue, that it just so happens, it seems, that the casinos and racetracks are already licensed, so in effect that's a problem. But Ted Olson pointed out, well, so are barbershops and auto body places, and he made the unintentional joke of New Jersey licenses everything, which got a laugh in the courtroom. But the point being that, that was one issue, and also the other was that there's a former site of a racetrack that is not licensed by the state that also would be allowed to offer it. So I'm not sure what the fact of that the casinos and racetracks are licensed in other forms, why is that relevant to this case?
Yeah, what the federal government and the leagues are trying to do is make a practical argument that it's unreasonable to think that the people that are regulating casinos and the racetracks under their existing licenses are going to turn a blind eye to improper, illegal, or unethical behavior happening on site in a sports gambling book operated by someone else. And that argument certainly has some practical significance and seemed to get a response from some of the judges. But, of course, the response to what you pointed out, that it's not limited to those areas. The former racetracks can have gambling. They don't yet have anything set up to do that. But if they do, they won't require a racetrack license because there's nothing in the repeal of the prohibition that references those licenses. It's only about these particular places. And, of course, if that were the rule, that would cause a lot of problems in other contexts because so much of modern life is subject to some sort of regulation and some sort of license. So the state of New Jersey was arguing that really what should matter is whether the particular activity, sports gambling, is being licensed or regulated, not whether the people involved have some unrelated license. So I briefly tried to raise the example earlier in the call about, you know, driver's licenses. If the federal government required, in effect, New Jersey to prohibit certain types of heavily polluting cars and to maintain those prohibitions, I don't think that you could say that they're not being commandeered if the state wanted to repeal them entirely because they're, in effect, licensing it because most drivers of cars have driver's licenses. If the license has little or nothing to do with the, you know, the activity that's at issue in the federal law, it doesn't make sense to say that the state is actually licensing that activity.
Once again, if you have a question, push the star button, then the pound button on your telephone. We do have another caller with a question, so let's take our second call of the day.
Hi, this is Will Michella from Brownstein, Hyatt, Farber & Schreck. Most anti-commandeering cases that we're familiar with clearly direct states to do something. Thou shalt dispose of nuclear waste in the following way, or thou shalt perform gun background checks. This one, of course, as you said at the top of the call, is quite different because it had a thou shalt not, but it froze existing prohibitions that were already on the state books into place. So I've got kind of two questions. One, how would you have us think about anti-commandeering in the context of the federal government kind of trying to freeze a state law into place? And then secondly, I'm interested in the distinction between kind of enforcement and the laws on the books. And I don't think the court addressed the issue, for example, of what if New Jersey decided not to appropriate any funds for the purpose of regulating sports betting in casinos? Could they permissively do that and still be in compliance with PASPA?
Mm-hmm. So on the first issue, I think the best way to think about this is that through its ability to preempt state laws, the federal government is free to stop, to be a negative, to stop the states from doing things. Where you raise commandeering issues is where the federal government is forcing the government to affirmatively do something. And I don't think that has to be limited to forcing a state to do something for the first time. So, for instance, I don't think any of the past commandeering cases would have changed if the state was already accepting the waste or already doing background checks. If the federal government orders the states to continue doing what they're doing and, in fact, taking away their choice to stop, it's still commandeering and imposing affirmative requirements on the state. And that's why PASPA lies somewhere in the middle, because it's subject to interpretation. I think the first panel's decision makes sense in interpreting PASPA to only forbid the state from affirmatively authorizing or licensing. That looks like preemption. But if it's going to be interpreted so that they can't just change how they prohibit or how they enforce their prohibitions, you know, that I think raises some serious commandeering issues. And it would lead to absurd results. So, as I mentioned, PASPA was enacted in the backdrop of every state but Nevada having prohibitions, against sports gambling. But you can imagine if that weren't the case and only, say, most of the states, but a few didn't have those prohibitions. The states that didn't would have been free to do, I think, what New Jersey's trying to do here by framing their new prohibition as limited to areas outside casinos and racetracks and by those under the age of 21. You'd have a hard time characterizing the initial prohibition without the backdrop of long-standing complete prohibitions as an authorization or a license. It's only because the state had a history of a broader prohibition that this question even arises. But as I said, I don't think you can use the state's past actions against it in order to avoid recognizing that the federal government is still commandeering the state. And I'm sorry, I forgot the second part of your question.
The second part of the question is really about appropriations. As I understood it at oral argument, there was some discussion about the types of changes that New Jersey could make consistent and be consistent with PASPA, but no one asked, from what I can tell, a question about whether or not New Jersey could just decide, hey, we're just not going to enforce this prohibition anymore. We're not going to appropriate funds for the purpose of enforcing the sports betting ban. And if the courts or the federal government can't mandate that the state spend money on enforcement, what's the distinction between kind of their gaming laws and the laws with regard to their annual appropriations and actually funding that which needs to be funded to enforce the law?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this came up briefly when Paul Clement was trying to avoid accepting the argument that the only choice the state had was a complete prohibition. He tried to go to great lengths to argue that the federal law doesn't require the states to implement or enforce their prohibitions, you know, across the board and rigorously in order to implement PASPA, that there's some leeway for states to change their focus and change their policies. But he still wasn't willing, this question didn't come specifically of whether they could just bar the use of appropriations for enforcement in casinos or racetracks. That didn't specifically come up, but one of the things that did was, what would happen if the enforcing agencies tried to do this? If you had a memo from the governor directing the people investigating violations of the state prohibition, telling them, don't go into casinos, don't go into racetracks, focus only everywhere else. That's the only place we're going to look at and put any of our enforcement resources to enforce the state prohibition on sports gambling. And Clement's response was, well, of course, that would run into the same problem. By specifically limiting it to the same places and being an across-the-board policy, it looks like an affirmative authorization. And I think that's the response he had to have, because it doesn't make sense to construe PASPA to give the executive and enforcement authorities the power to set this policy, but forbid the legislature from doing so. That doesn't make a lot of sense in light of the objectives of PASPA and wouldn't necessarily avoid the commandeering issue, but it still runs into the problem the first caller raised, that there's really no objective criteria under the leagues of federal government's interpretation to explain when a partial repeal is okay and when it isn't. Really, the only one that seems clear and enforceable by the courts is the hard rule of your only option is completely repeal prohibitions. And as I said, that raises a lot of other concerns and would seem to create chaos that I'm sure the leagues and the federal government don't want, but might be such an incredibly hard choice that it would effectively prevent states from doing any sort of repeal.
Once again, if you have a question, push the star button, then the pound button on your telephone. Our lines are wide open at this point. Jonathan Wood, if I could, take you back to the part of your discussion about the unequal regulation of the states. This maybe goes beyond this case, but is that ever okay to have unequal regulation of the states by the federal government? Is there no allowance for sort of some sort of grandfathering clause that Nevada has for a long time had sports gambling. None of the other states had.
So it's not clear based on existing law. I think this is a wide open question. It didn't come up in the en banc oral argument, and because of the first panel decision wasn't raised in the before the second panel. But the first panel in the Third Circuit held, in effect, that the equal sovereignty doctrine doesn't apply to Commerce Clause regulation, that it's really limited to the voting rights context and the process for becoming states, two areas where it has been applied by the Supreme Court in the past. I don't think that's a sensible limit on the doctrine. The point of the equal sovereignty doctrine is that the federal government shouldn't be in the business of regulating states qua state. If regulations have to be determined at the local level, they should be determined by the state and local government, not set individually by the Fed. So you can imagine, for instance, the federal government adopting a minimum wage for every single state. Those kind of policy decisions under the Constitution are supposed to be made by the state and local government officials who are accountable to the people affected by those local policies. It's one thing if a general federal standard has different applications in states, but the federal government shouldn't be in the business of setting different standards by states without regard to some neutral principle. And here the government's best argument, I think, is that they were just grandfathering in the existing Nevada sports gambling, that this imposing a prohibition would have been far more disruptive in Nevada than anywhere else. So that is what distinguishes it. I think the rebuttal to that is that it's been a very long time. The grandfather clause is, in effect, a permanent monopoly to Nevada to engage in sports betting, and that's something that the founders were concerned about. In my amicus brief supporting cert, I brought up a bunch of evidence from the founding and from the early history of the United States showing that one of the concerns was that the federal government would get into granting monopolies to particular states for industry, and that's why they wanted uniform across-the-board federal regulation.
Well, once again, if you have a question, push the star button, then the pound button on your telephone. We do have another question.
Yeah, this is John Brennan from the Bergen Record again. Just picking up on that issue you're talking about with equal sovereignty, just can you confirm for me the first ruling, while it was 2-1, I think Judge Vanaski, the dissenter, actually agreed on the equal sovereignty issue, so that was unanimous, but he disagreed on commandeering, is that right?
That's right. None of the judges so far have bought the equal sovereignty doctrine, but there was a dissent on commandeering in the first panel.
Okay, and the last part about that was that – so what you're saying is that decision was vacated, so that there's no legal relevance to that 3-0 opinion on equal sovereignty then, I guess, right, in the future?
No, it hasn't been vacated because that was a different case. However, because the Third Circuit is hearing this case en banc, it's not bound by that decision.
Okay,
so several judges.
It could be referenced in a future case in other states on equal sovereignty, though.
Yeah, assuming the en banc panel doesn't overrule any aspects of that, it's certainly existing precedent in the circuit and citable outside of it.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Let me make a final call for questions now. If you have a question for our expert, Jonathan Wood, push the star button, then the pound button on your telephone. I don't see another question. Do you have a final thought here for us today, or want to summarize or wrap up?
Sure. So one of the issues that didn't get a lot of fleshing out in the oral argument, but that I thought was quite interesting in the briefs, is the question of 11th Amendment sovereign immunity. The most recent statute by Nevada doesn't actually call for the governor or any state executive to do anything. It's self-executing. It automatically repeals the prohibition. So what the defendants have argued is that it's subject to the immunity, that there's no relief you can get against the governor or the executives in charge of administering regulations casinos because they don't do anything under the law. And that's different from the first case where they were setting up the licensing and regulation regime. And there's not a great response to that. It seems to be more of a practical one. Well, that since these are largely happening on places that are subject to different licenses, the casinos and the racetracks, the state executive officer still has some role to play. The problem with that is that the only relief you would seem to be able to get is to enjoin implementation of the other licensing regime. And none of the leagues or the federal government have asked for that, and there'd probably be a lot of dislocation if they did, because you'd certainly have to shut down New Jersey casinos. But as you probably gathered from my comments, I'm somewhat sympathetic to New Jersey's commandeering case, but based on the en banc oral argument, it's really hard to say which way it's going to go. Several of the judges were concerned by some of the absurd applications you might get if you were to accept the federal government or the licenses or the league's argument, and the difficulty in line drawing if you side with them. But several of the others were concerned about what New Jersey is doing here is essentially thumbing its nose at Congress. The point in PASPA is clearly to stop states like New Jersey from licensing sports gambling, and so it makes little sense to cleverly interpret PASPA to allow the states to do exactly what Congress is trying to stop.
Well, very good. Let me thank you, Jonathan Wood, for joining us today. This is an interesting case. What are the prospects going forward? Do you have a sense of the timetable here?
No, the en banc court will take as long as it wants, given that every single decision to this point has come out in favor of the federal government and the leagues. I would assume the smart betting money would be on an affirmance of the panel, but the timeline for when that might happen is anyone's guess.
Okay. Well, perhaps we can have you back when that decision does emerge. But thank you again for joining us. This has been a very interesting, entertaining discussion. I want to thank the audience as well for joining and for your questions. Reminder to check our website and also monitor your emails for the next scheduled Teleforum conference call. But until that call, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.